I loved Kale more than I could explain. That's all we can do is our best. A cough broke through the air, the sound too big for her small body. I reached over and patted her back softly, handing her a glass of water. She shook me off gently. I'm fine, I've had this cough for a while. Damn thing won't go away. She coughed a bit more, covering her mouth as her thin shoulders hunched. Tss. She struggled to find her words, but I didn't have a clue what she was looking for. Tay. She finally said her daughter's name, but she looked confused. Tay keeps harping on me to see a doctor, but I don't have time or energy for that. I'm staying out of that. But I will say it's better to deal with crappy doctors than suffer in silence. She nodded. Her eyes focused again. She changed the subject immediately, asking me every question under the moon. The sun was coming up as I finished telling her more about my job, my house. I realized when she went to her room to get dressed for the day, I hadn't thought about the rest of the brewing storm waiting for us back at Benning. For a short while, I'd felt like a normal young woman venting to an old friend. It felt so good. But of course, my brain reminded me that it would likely be the first and last time. Kale stirred a little as I sat back down on the couch, and he reached for me, resting his head on my lap. He fell back asleep, his lips parting slightly, and I closed my eyes for a while. When I woke up again, I looked up to see his mom standing in the doorway of the kitchen, same coffee mug in hand, watching us, with a sweet smile on her face.
Chapter 21. Kale. Waking up to Karina in my ma's living room was more jarring than I'd expected. I was confused as fuck as to where I was and what year it was. I hadn't slept on that couch in years. Hi, she smiled down at me, her hair falling over her shoulders. Hi, I repeated, stretching my body as much as I could on the small couch. The smell was so familiar, but the circumstances were not. Karina seemed well-rested, a sense of ease over her that typically wasn't there. As we left, my ma hugged me again and again, calling me my uncle's name by accident. She had done that a few times on the phone, but I knew she was usually so exhausted from work that it made sense to mix our names up. That and our names were so similar. My sister had left for a study group earlier, but that was no surprise. Karina and my ma seemed to have a hard time saying goodbye to one another, which I both loved and hated. I knew I was only making things more complicated by intertwining our lives in every possible way. Were you nervous about me meeting your family? She asked me as I pulled onto the highway. I knew she would eventually ask her questions, but we had a long drive ahead, so part of me hoped her inquisition could wait until we were a little further into the day. My ma had been a mess when we'd left, but I promised her that I could come back more often. Karina made me promise her the same, pouting over not seeing my old bedroom, which I built out back. It was about the size of two sheds together and had everything I needed inside. When I was deep in deployment, I had daydreamed about running away and living there, in the back of my ma's house forever. A bit, yeah. I didn't look at her, but I heard the subtle inhale she made at my honesty. Because of me? Or because you haven't introduced anyone to them? She asked. I knew she would assume it was because of something wrong with her, even though that couldn't be further from the truth. No, I shook my head, putting my blinker on to change lanes, even though the road was empty except us. Because of me. I didn't think I would ever bring my two lives together. Two lives? It feels that way. Not as sinister as it sounds, but it does feel like I have two versions of myself, I admitted. Or more. She was quiet for a few seconds. When I looked at her, she was staring out the window at the trees as we passed. And which version of you do I know? She finally asked. The only one that matters. That's not a real answer. She was too clever to accept my bland response. You know the me that no one else does, so it is a real answer. The man you know, flaws and all, is someone only you have met. Truly. Karina looked at me and curled her legs up in the seat, wrapping her forearm around her shins. Her eyes were soft and accepting, deciding to take my response at face value and let it go, for now. She was the one person I'd ever opened up to in this way, one of the only people I'd ever trusted in my life, and that meant a lot. I had fucked up when it came to her, and she had forgiven me, but who knew how long it would be until everything unraveled with her father. I was lying to her, even now, even as she trusted my words, and we drove in near silence with only the sound of her playlist in the car. Memories flashed through my mind like an open camera roll. Her father, the first time I met him, dirt and dust covering every part of his face, his gun against his chest. Her soft, welcoming eyes the first time I saw her at the massage studio. Him again, clean and shaven, threatening Mendoza into silence, using his power in the most disgusting way. Her rambling to me on the living room floor as she painted her nails, laughing and unguarded. The silent shock in his eyes when I walked into his home for the first time with his daughter. Her voice when she comforted the darkest parts of me. Him showing up at her house and ruining everything. Him begging me to take his daughter away from here. The devastation in her eyes when she learned the truth. There I was repeating history and I couldn't stop it. Technically I could, but I wasn't. I should have told her everything, but I couldn't bring myself to. I loved her, but I hated him more. The thought made my stomach turn, and I knew how fucked up it was. But I glanced at her again in the passenger seat and decided to keep the secret a little longer. Fisher and Elodie were in the living room when we got back to Karina's house. Elodie had just gotten off work, and it was Karina's turn to go in. I suspected their boss hated me at this point, since both were missing so much work lately, and by proxy, I was to blame. While Karina showered, I put her laundry in the washer, folding the pile of towels that had been in the dryer. The dryer filter was covered in lint, so I cleaned it off, wiped down her counters, and washed the dishes in the sink. When she emerged, her hair wet and in a braid that was falling apart, I was drying a bowl.
"You didn't have to do that,"
she said, lowering my hand with the bowl and towel. "I know, but I did anyway." I kissed her forehead and placed the bowl in the drying rack. I put my hands on her shoulders and turned her around gently to fix her braid.
"You're spoiling me and I'm going to get too used to it," she told me,
her tone split, half joking, half worried. It seemed a bit ominous, and paranoia crept in, as if her words were a reminder that I knew deep down that this was all temporary, a fragile hourglass, slowly dropping sand as the time passed. "You should expect to be treated this way, Karina. Nothing less. Promise me?" I tied the band around the bottom of her hair and turned her around again. Kissing her forehead, then the bridge of her nose, then her lips, I felt impossibly attached to her with every moment we spent together. But everything was going too well in my life, so I was expecting a tornado to come rip it apart. My fate wasn't to be gifted a happy, comfortable life with Karina. To live in a beautiful home with our children running around. I knew better than that. My sins would catch up to me, and I was practically begging them to by complicating Karina's life day by day, and not just going away and leaving her to have a calm, honest life. She trusted me, and that fucking killed me. There was a war waging inside of me. I wanted the best for her. I really fucking did. I wish like hell that the best for her could be me at the end. But I wasn't the best for anyone, and I seemed to consistently leave a path of destruction in my wake.
"As long as you keep doing it, I'll keep expecting it. Are you hungry?"
"I can reheat some of the food your ma sent home with us before I leave," she offered.
My ma had sent us off with 2 stacks of Tupperware full of dumplings, shrimp and grits, bread, steamed purple potatoes. I didn't catch all of it. I think some ham or beef, too. Food had always been one way for her to show her affection. Even on nights when she worked until dawn stocking shelves at the local grocery store, she would make sure there was always food in the house for me and Tay. I could imagine Karina as that type of mother, always thinking ahead for her children and doing anything, literally anything for them. She put me and everyone around her first. I couldn't imagine how extreme her empathy would be for her children. How lucky they will be. Instead of promising her anything that I wasn't sure I could keep, I lifted her chin with my thumb and had her eyes touch mine. Her cheeks flushed pink, and I kissed her shiny lips, tasting the coconut-flavored lip balm she had been using lately. I'll wait for you to get home and then we can eat together. I have a couple of errands to run, and I need to put up some drywall, but if your brother helps me, I'll be done and here waiting when your shift is over.
I love the sound of that,
she grinned, lifting herself onto her toes to kiss me. Can you two get a fucking room? Fisher groaned, striding into the kitchen.
This is my house, so if you don't like it, get out,
Karina said and kissed me again. Come on, he whined.
You've been having a secret relationship with my married best friend, so I don't want to hear a word from you.
She pointed her finger at him. She was teasing him, but she was right as hell. He smiled, the length of it going nearly from ear to ear. Touché, Care. Touché. Fisher grabbed a glass and filled it with water from the sink before leaving us in the kitchen again. I'll be back in a few hours, I told her, hugging my arms around her body, inhaling her intoxicating scent.
Me too, she responded. I love you, Kale.
I didn't deserve her love, but I needed it to survive for as long as I could take it. I love you, Karina. After she left, I got into my truck and brought Elodie and Fisher with me to my duplex. I needed his help today or the drywall would never get finished by the end of the week. He insisted that Elodie come with us as he didn't want her to be at home alone, and neither did I. Not until we knew what mental state Phillips was in. I got a text from Mendoza saying that Phillips was staying with someone from his old platoon, but he didn't know who. That it had been so quiet and no one had heard from him except for hearsay was concerning. I'd been in my Karina bubble the last 36 hours. I debated calling him, but I knew Phillips saw me as his enemy now that I had so clearly chosen a side. Now that we were back near post, I hated the idea of not knowing his next move, or if he even had one. In hopes that the other night was a one-off, I put my phone on the counter and got my ass to work. I was so lost in the manual labor of using my hands and mind to build something that I hadn't realized that Fisher had stopped helping me. I no longer heard him talking to Elodie or any tools being used. I wiped the sweat off my face with the bottom of my debris-covered t-shirt and made my way through the mess to find him. Elodie was in the living room of my side of the duplex, sitting cross-legged on the couch watching a show on my barely used TV. But he wasn't there with her. I passed her and listened closely, following the trail of his voice outside to my front yard. I stood in the doorway but didn't open the door right away. I'll send you the money as soon as I can. I'm working more this week, Austin said into the phone. I shifted my body sideways so he would be less likely to see me listening. This little fucker better not owe people money or be using again. I would kill him. Are you really going to come here? He asked whoever was on the other line. My blood began to boil, my suspicion growing high. Who the fuck was going to come here? With their father's warnings to me and the situation with Phillips, the last thing any of us needed was someone coming to Fisher to get money he owed them. Okay, I'll figure it out. Be safe, okay? He told them and hung up the phone. As soon as he stepped inside, I grabbed him by the collar of his t-shirt and slammed him into the wall. What the fuck are you thinking? His entire face went pale and his eyes widened. Shock didn't begin to describe the widening of his light eyes. What? How long were you standing there? He asked, trying to push me back by his elbows. I pushed forward, pinning him against the wall. Long enough to know that I've worked my ass off to get you into the army and you're fucking up again. I searched his face, waiting for an explanation. You better not lie to me. I heard you. You owe someone money and they're going to come after it, as if you don't have enough people trying to come after you. I could barely contain my anger. I needed him to make it to and through basic, to make a living and have health care, to have stability for once in his life and stop letting his impulses control him, for himself and for Karina. It was the least I could do. Are you using again? Empty your pockets. I let go of him with one arm, knowing one was enough to hold him still, and dug my free hand into his pockets, dumping them both onto the floor. A debit card, a keychain, and his phone fell to the ground. Nothing more. What the fuck, man? Get off me! He shouted, pushing at my unwavering grip on him. I'm not on anything. I haven't even had a damn drink. Let me go.
Elodie came rushing to the door.
What's happening?
She shrieked, yanking at my arms to let him go. I dropped my grip, stepped away from him, and her hands flew up in the air.
Why are you guys fighting? Tell me,
she demanded. Our breath was wild and my anger began to melt away as I saw how shaken up Elodie was. She had been through enough, and here I was sending her into a panic.
Fuck.
Nothing. Just a misunderstanding and him jumping to thinking the worst of me. As usual,
Fisher said, his eyes filled with moisture. I could feel the hurt in them as he picked up his stuff from the floor and grabbed the front door handle.
I want to get out of here,
he told Elodie, not looking at me.
Fisher, why don't you?
I began. All he needed to do was tell me what the hell was going on with the phone call I just heard.
Martin, why don't you just fuck off with your holier-than-thou shtick? You kept feeding me bullshit, saying how great I was doing, how proud of me you were, how I would make a great soldier.
His voice broke and he began to cry, trying his hardest to stop but failing.
All that just to accuse me of being high in one flash of a second. Fuck you for making me believe you actually thought I had a chance.
He spat, flinging the door open. Elodie looked confused and afraid, but followed him out of the house and they got into her car. I watched them drive away, hearing his words repeat themselves, echoing through my mind as I slammed the door and slid down the back of it. About 20 minutes later, a knock at my door made me stand up. Assuming it was Fisher, I opened it, ready to apologize for being so quick to jump to the worst-case scenario when he had been doing so good lately, even passing a drug test 2 days ago. My worry for him and his future clouded my judgment, and I was about to begin my sincere apology when I realized it wasn't Fisher at my door. It was Phillips.
Chapter 22, Kale.
What the hell are you doing here? I stood up straight, mentally clocking how long it would take me to grab my gun if I needed to. Phillips seemed to have lost all his rage-induced energy from the other night. His eyes were sunken in, his face more pale than usual, and his cheeks hollow. Purple and blue bruises covered the span of his left cheek all the way down to his jaw, and his neck had a red ring around it. All from my hands. To my surprise, he didn't smell like alcohol and seemed alert for the most part.
Can I come in? I don't have anything on me.
He shook his pockets of his jeans and patted them all. Why should I let you in here after what you did? His eyes went down to the porch.
I don't have anywhere else to go and I need my battle buddy.
He hadn't called me that in so long that it sounded foreign to me. I looked him up and down trying to remember the things I used to respect about him, but was at a loss after he'd put Karina in danger. You don't have a battle buddy anymore, I told him point blank. He visibly shuddered at my words. That was one of the worst things a soldier could hear.
Martin, I know what I did was beyond fucked up. I came to apologize.
I thought you came because you don't have anywhere else to go, I reminded him, not buying his apology bullshit yet. He pulled out a fucking gun in a yard full of people I care about.
That too, but the apology is the first reason. Please let me in.
Phillips had changed so much since I met him. I'd always tried to ignore the subtle shifts in stability, the mood swings, and how easily angered he could become, and put the blame on our circumstance, being at war, and trying to stay alive and all. I stepped aside and let him pass. In jeans and his gray PT shirt that said Army in black font, he stood in the center of the living room, looking like a teenage boy about to get scolded by his parents. Speaking of parents, I wondered if his parents even knew he was home. I should have called them. But then again, he was a loose cannon now and not my problem. Not anymore. Did you tell your parents you're back? I asked him, keeping a few feet between us for both of our safety, especially his. He nodded slowly and cowardly. Did you tell them that you tried to kill your own pregnant wife? His eyes bugged out and he moved his body dramatically like a fish out of water, swaying and flopping while standing upright.
That's not what that was. I don't know what the hell I was thinking, but I wouldn't hurt her.
That's not what it looked like to me. Not only did you almost kill someone, you disrespected her and humiliated her in front of everyone.
She's been cheating on me, Martin, while pregnant with my baby. If it's even mine.
As he said the words, I knew he believed them. Fisher wasn't even around when you got her pregnant, so use fucking logic.
Maybe not him. But at this point, who knows what she's been doing since I brought her here?
He was evidently distraught.
I'm clearly her meal ticket out of her country, a cash cow.
I couldn't stop the laugh that bellowed out. A cash cow. You're private first class and she's from France, one of the most developed countries in the world. You know better than this. She isn't the kind of person to use someone like that, even you.
And you know her so well now? You only hung out with her a handful of times before you left, and now that you're fucking that Karina girl.
I held my hand up to save him from what would come if he said another word about her. Remember what I said about you disrespecting Karina? This is your last warning. Do not mention her name again in front of me. Do not even think about her name, her face, her existence, unless you want me to rip your tongue out of your mouth. I was instantly pulled back to the car ride home from my ma's when Karina asked me how many versions of myself there were. This was one she had not and would never see. But ironically, this was the one that came the most naturally.
Okay. Okay. You love her, don't you?
He asked me, looking me dead in the eyes. I thought about lying, but he needed to know the lengths I would go for her. It could backfire and give him ammunition to try to get back at me through her. If he did, that would be his death sentence. I do. His thin lips turned into a smile. It wasn't the one I was used to. It was like a pencil sketch of the outline of the smile I had known for years.
Is that the reason you're so nonchalant about my wife cheating on me and leaving me for Karina's brother of all people?
He asked, sinking to the floor as if he couldn't bear the weight of his own frail body. I'm not nonchalant about it. I don't think what either of them did is okay, but they did what they did. And I know it must hurt like hell, but risking your life and hers is not going to change what happened, and you know it. I won't make excuses for them. It's not my place. But I can tell you that if you try to hurt them to subdue your own pain, you will suffer.
By my own hands or yours?
He asked, darkness coating his voice like tendrils. Both. He closed his eyes, taking a couple of breaths.
How long have you known? You were my best friend and you didn't say a word to me. After everything we've been through, you didn't love me enough to tell me before I was humiliated.
I didn't know either. No one did.
Everyone does now. And someone knew enough to tell me online. Can you imagine how embarrassing it was to find out on fucking Facebook and to have to find a private who owed me a favor to go around stalking them to get proof?
I immediately realized that the private was the one who'd sent the photo of Elodie and Fisher to everyone on Phillips's orders. Probably some newly enlisted, easily scared punk. You took it too far by having someone follow her around. Why not have a conversation with your wife? He scoffed.
They took it too far by fucking behind my back.
Why would you tell everyone? Isn't that more humiliating? I circled around him. His eyes followed me.
Too late for that. I was already humiliated, so they should be too. I had a feeling something was going on with her long before I got the Facebook message, but I needed to see it with my own eyes.
Unfortunately, Elodie was the only one who was hurt. Fisher couldn't care less, which makes the whole thing pettier. Anyway, your wife cheated on you, so now what? You can't control yourself, so you spiral and get yourself in trouble, losing your career and fucking up your whole life? I did feel for him and didn't agree with the choices made by any of them, but honestly, this was the fucking military. Marriages without affairs or scandal were less common than with civilians, and I wasn't going to feed into his pity party, especially when he had been treating Elodie like shit since he left and likely before. People were losing their lives around us. It was hard to find sympathy for him.
That's up to me.
He touched his chest, looking behind me to the wall.
I can't stop being fucking livid about it.
He paused.
I don't know what to do with my anger, Martin.
You transferred your war mentality to home. You're so used to being on edge, checking your back all day, waiting to be attacked. When you found out about this, it gave you a new outlet. I'm sure it hurts like hell, but I'm begging you to try to look at it from above. Are you that desperately in love with her and honestly believe your marriage can be saved or would have been fine if this didn't happen? Or are you used to mental chaos and now you're transferring that emotion? Be honest with me, or at least yourself. I sat down on the couch, no longer wanting him to feel like a caged animal being taunted. I checked my phone to see if Karina had texted me since she'd gotten to work, but she hadn't yet.
My marriage was fucked from the beginning.
Maybe her relationship with Fisher gives you a proper reason to admit that and come to terms with it. You tried, she tried. I might sound like an asshole, but it's better to get a divorce now than waste more time. People get divorced all the time. Phillips raised a brow at me and came to sit on the other side of the couch.
Is that supposed to be comforting?
I couldn't help the smile that took over my face. We were 18 again and back in Afghanistan, sharing the snacks from my ma's care package. He was different then. So was I. The harshness of our reality hadn't developed yet. He was one of the only people I knew who could make me laugh. The memory became fuzzy around the edges, blurring into him holding a gun in Mendoza's yard. It's supposed to help you wake the hell up before you really do something you'll regret. Comfort is a luxury that you and I can't afford. He nodded, closing his eyes slightly. It seemed like he hadn't slept since getting back to the States. Are you hungry? I asked him, noting the shallow dips in his cheekbones.
Actually, yeah. I'm fucking starving.
I got up and he followed me into the kitchen. Pulling open the cabinets, I grabbed two ramen packs and a small pot.
At least you still eat like a broke college kid,
Philip said when I pulled a carton of eggs out of the fridge. Some things won't ever change, I offered, pointing for him to sit down while I made his food. He was quiet, complimenting the progress on the place every few minutes. I was feeling extra hospitable and chopped up some green onion and bacon to add. I grabbed a protein shake and slid it across the counter. You're emaciated, I told him. He looked down at himself, seeming surprised.
I guess I am. I haven't been eating or sleeping.
I poured the noodles into a bowl and handed him a fork and a spoon. I can tell.
Thanks for letting me in and listening to me, Martin. I thought you would tell me to fuck off or choke me again.
He laughed as he blew on the steam from the bowl. I didn't respond. There wasn't anything to say outside of warning him that if he didn't get his shit together, I would kill him. But he knew that. After he scarfed down the noodles, I made him a couple of eggs to get his protein up. The color slowly returned to his cheeks as he ate. I didn't fully trust him and never would, but I hoped our heart-to-heart had made him get a grip on what was at stake. Go lie down. I'm going to work some, but we'll keep the noise down as much as I can. If you wake up and I'm gone, don't come find me. And remember not to do anything dumb. He stretched his thin arms into the air and twisted his spine.
I won't. I won't,
he promised. And I hoped for his sake that he would keep it. Chapter 23. Kale. When I walked out of my house to head back to Karina's, my least favorite person was waiting for me. Karina's dad was idling in my driveway in his brand new shiny Ford truck. He rolled the window down as I approached the vehicle. Are you stalking me now?
I can't deny that, sitting here in front of your house.
There was a harmless sarcasm in his voice that was completely new to our dynamic. What do you want this time? It's barely been 48 hours. I haven't managed to convince Karina to leave the county yet. I looked around my quiet street as a semi with a moving company logo drove by us. Military families kept them in business around here.
Her mom is back,
he said blankly. I jerked my head toward him. There was no way I'd heard him correctly. What did you say? By the unsettled way his face twisted and how much anxiety was in his voice as he repeated himself, I could tell that it was true. When did that happen? And why? I didn't know what questions to ask or how to process this.
Seems like she's been here for at least a month, maybe two. I don't know the why yet.
My heart rate spiked. How much more would life throw at Karina? It wasn't fair. Was this a good thing or another traumatic relationship for her to try to navigate? How do you know? He let out a deep breath. I could instinctually understand that he was unsure if he should share more information with me or not, but he didn't have much of a choice. On the outside, he was a high-ranking officer who demanded respect with a single glance, but deep down, he was a lonely man with no one on his side when it came to the outside world and no connection with his daughter. This served as a reminder to him that regardless of his rank and status, things like family and death couldn't be controlled, which I was sure drove him mad.
I saw her. She was at the PX near my house. I thought I was losing it, or the meds my doctor put me on were making me hallucinate. I never thought I would see her again, but after 6 years, she's here, and I don't know what she wants or how long she'll be here.
A small part of me was thrilled at the idea of Karina seeing her mother after years had passed. A woman who'd made a mistake now coming to town to atone for abandoning her children and making up for the time lost. But a much bigger, more logical part knew that was naive and not likely to be the case. If it was, wouldn't she have found Karina by now? And what do you want from me? I asked, genuinely curious what the hell he expected me to do about his ex-wife coming back. His shoulders slumped a little and his phone rang through the truck speaker. Estelle's name displayed on the screen. He seemed worried, and since he was unable to hide it in front of me of all people, that made me worried too. What kind of woman was Karina's mother? I'd heard at least 100 stories about her, and none of them made for a promising reunion.
I didn't come to ask you to do anything this time. I came to warn you so when she steps into the light in Karina's and Austin's lives, you can be there for them, especially my daughter. She was much more affected by her mom leaving, and I don't want her to get her heart broken again.
Did you talk to her?
Your ex-wife?
So I know what kind of headspace this woman is in? Do you have any information that can help me help them? He shook his head.
The only information I have is that she won't stay, and she was never ready to be a mother. Her headspace? That's going to be interesting to figure out if we can. Her mental health was more than complicated leading up to her departure.
The way he threw out departure in such a nonchalant and calm way was ridiculous. He made it sound like she'd simply gotten on a train for a vacation, not left her family in the middle of the night. How was she at the PX? Would she still have an ID card? I asked while trying to dissect the details out of the tiny bit of information I was given.
No idea. I haven't gotten any notification that she ever applied for anything. She might still be using her old ID. It might not be expired. But she sure as hell was on post.
Was she alone?
I couldn't tell. She was walking out as I drove by, a bottle of Pepsi in her hand, he told me, as if that meant something to me. Pepsi. Got it. I tried not to roll my eyes.
For such a great officer, he sucked at paying attention when it mattered. Did she look like she was on anything? Drinking or drugs? He thought for a moment before he shook his head.
No. Didn't look like it. She looked alive.
He looked at me and I looked at him. He sounded like he was still in shock a bit, or he had believed her to be dead. That may have been better at this point. I got the feeling he wasn't speaking of her literally being alive, but his expression was cloudy and unfocused.
Call me if you need my assistance,
he told me as he revved up his truck to leave. What an unlikely duo, united against both our wills.
Chapter 24. Karina. My body wouldn't stay warm for some reason. I kept shoving my hands inside the warm towels and even kept them on my heated bed between clients, but nothing I did would keep the warmth. Molly hissed at me when I tried to turn the heat up for a third time, and Tina, my longtime client, was practically sweating during her session. She didn't complain as she asked about my brother, like usual. She always used her skills as a family therapist during her sessions with me. I told her a little, but left out everything that mattered. I trusted her, but I was exhausted as it was, and didn't feel like sharing for once. I checked the clock so many times during my shift, which was unusual since I typically zoned out during my treatments. I really hoped I was just distracted and not becoming burned out or bored. When my shift was over, I did my usual closing duties and took the food Molly offered me home, even though I wanted to eat the leftovers from Kale's mom first, because I didn't want the food to go to waste. It was pork and a mix of vegetables, and a sauce that smelled spicy and sweet. Tons of rice on the side, which usually lasted Elodie and me for days. I walked across the dark alley and pulled my phone out to tell Kale I was on my way back. I thought I heard footsteps and turned toward the sound, but no one was there. Less than 30 seconds later, I heard the steps again. I shot around faster this time, and my phone fell out of my hand as I looked at a woman who looked so much like my mother that it made me freeze in place. Before I could blink, she was gone. Or was she even there to begin with? I looked around, kneeling down to grab my phone and wipe it off, but there wasn't a trace of anyone. No sound, no motion lights from the other businesses turning on. Nothing. Okay, Karina, you need to freaking sleep. I picked up the pace and got out of the alley before my mind played any more tricks on me. Relief filled me as I saw Kale's truck parked on the street. I practically skipped home and rushed up my stairs. I couldn't shake the feeling and the memory of the mirage of my mother, so I chose to compartmentalize it and pretend it hadn't happened. "Honey, I'm home," I announced, smiling at myself because, corny or not, I always loved when husbands and wives would say that to one another on sitcoms. Kale came into the living room from the kitchen and smiled, setting down a plate on the chair and scooping me into his arms. He was so warm that I shivered, some of the cold leaving my body instantly.
"You okay?"
he asked, putting my feet down on the floor. He dipped his eyes down to look at me. "I'm tired, I think. I've been cold all shift. Nothing could make me warm. Even now, isn't it freezing in here?" I looked at the thermostat on the wall. It said 74, but it felt like 50-something.
"I'm the wrong person to ask that,"
he told me, touching his warm hand to my forehead to gauge my temperature.
"You don't have a fever, but you should eat, take a hot shower, and sleep. Do you work again tomorrow?"
he asked. I nodded and bent down to pull my shoes off. I dropped my purse by the door and followed Kale into the kitchen with a bag of Molly's homemade food in hand. My house smelled almost as good as Dory's, and I was surprised by how much I missed her already. I had only spent one day with her, but it felt like many more. I wondered when we would see her again, and hoped it would be soon. What she'd said about accepting my parents for who they were had such an impact on me. It was the first time someone gave me decent advice about how to deal with the loss I felt from both of my parents.
"It'll be done heating up in about 2 minutes. Have a seat," Kale told me.
I looked at the stove, and there were two pots on it, and the oven was on. "You could have used the microwave," I reminded him, feeling a bit bad about the pile of dishes that I knew he wouldn't let me wash.
"It wouldn't taste the same."
Kale shook his head, stirring one of the pots with a wooden spoon. "I know this sounds crazy, but I thought I saw my mom," I told him, full of embarrassment. I knew he wouldn't judge me, but he was right. I was so on edge lately and really needed freaking sleep. He turned to face me, resting the spoon on the edge of the pot.
"Your mom?"
I nodded. It obviously wasn't her. I don't think anyone was even there, but that's a little more worrisome for my sanity, you know? But I felt like I was being followed and looked up and imagined my mom there. It felt so real. I really wish she would quit haunting me. Literally. I tried to laugh it off, but the image of the woman was so fresh that it was nearly impossible to shake.
"Baby," Kale said, his eyes full of sympathy. Crossing the tile, he came over and stood behind me. I tilted my head back to look up at him. He didn't have a bad angle, and the more I looked at him, the more devastatingly beautiful he was. His lips were wet and warm as he bent down and kissed me. He cupped his hand around my chin, keeping my head tilted toward him. His tongue slid into my mouth, and the groan that escaped was impossible to keep in. The relaxation he brought should be bottled up and sold. My body began to finally warm up as he pulled away, kissing my forehead. He kept his eyes on me as he used both hands to rub the tops of my shoulders.
"I'm not a professional,"
he warned me, as his fingers worked against my tired and stiff trapezius. "You're doing great." I rolled my neck, and the relief was instant. "I don't know the last time I've gotten treated, professionally or not," I told him. He pressed his fingers into the muscle, keeping pressure there for a few seconds. It hurt, but I knew it would feel better after.
"Let's eat, and I'll give you a full body treatment for free."
He playfully winked at me. It was very out of character, adorable and corny at the same time. "That sounds suggestive," I teased him, raising my brow as he walked backward to the stove. He turned the fire off and laughed.
"It might be."
I pressed my thighs together, trying to hide how easily my body reacted to him. I could tell by the look in his eyes that it was obvious, that I wasn't hiding anything. He plated the food and put the pots in the sink. My mind was much quieter than it had been all day. What a relief. Instead of thinking about every single thought I've ever had, I only thought about Kale, the food, and how glad I was that he was here and in my life in general. I finally felt tethered to the earth, not in a suffocating way, but in a safe way. I was so tired of always floating around, solving everyone else's problems, and never taking a breath for myself. With Kale, I felt agency. I felt heard and protected. As my mind wandered to what would become of us in the future, he set a plate of steaming food in front of me. I hadn't eaten at all, and my stomach growled angrily at me for starving it all day.
"If you're still hungry after this, I'll heat up Molly's food," he offered, sliding a fork between my fingers.
"Thank you." I dug in, taking a huge bite of the dumplings. They were even better today. How was that possible? I needed to get the recipe from his mom immediately. We ate in comfortable silence. I started to get sleepy as my plate neared being empty. I couldn't stop yawning. Kale stopped me when I tried to put my plate in the sink.
"Go take a shower. I'll take care of this."
He kissed my cheek, smiling as I yawned again. The shower was warm, and even though I was exhausted, I went through a whole everything shower. I shaved, double shampooed, and exfoliated my entire body. I felt so much better by the time I got out. Self-care really was so healing. I went to my room and put on a pair of shorts and a sweatshirt. I heard the water running in the kitchen, the great thing about my tiny house and its shoddy pipes. I tried to keep my eyes open, listening to the water run. I thought I was dreaming when I woke up to warm hands moving up and down my calves. I opened my eyes just enough to see Kale kneeling on my bed behind me.
"Thank you," I managed to say.
"Do you want to sleep instead? My offer will still stand tomorrow,"
he told me.
"Both. You rub and I'll sleep."
I closed my eyes again as he moved his hands down to my feet. I hadn't realized how much my body had needed a massage. I spent my time treating others, but hadn't been treated in so long. It felt like a metaphor for how I lived my life, but I was so tired that I didn't want to spend my last bit of energy dissecting it. Chapter 25. Karina. It was pouring outside when I woke up, and so my room was filled with humidity.
freaking Georgia and its unpredictable weather. Kale's body was practically a heater, and the more it rained, the warmer he grew. I mentally scanned my body, which felt so much better than it had when I went to sleep. I was still a little tired, but my mind felt so much clearer than it had been in so long. Maybe all I'd needed was a good night's sleep. Kale's arm was tight around my waist, his breath warm against the back of my ear. I wondered how I'd ever slept a night without him, and what would happen if I ever had to again. I hated the way my mind always went to the worst-case scenario, instead of to the next step and the immediate future. I couldn't seem to enjoy a moment for too long without thinking of its expiration. My eyes shut. I counted backward slowly from 100 to calm my thoughts and slow my breath before Kale woke up mid-panic. I wanted him to sleep soundly, not be disrupted by my mental gymnastics. I kept having to restart the countdown, but I finally began to zone out around 54 and dozed back off to sleep. This time, when I woke up, Kale was no longer wrapped around me. I sat up to look for him, but he wasn't in my room. I made sure I had enough clothes on to leave the room if Elodie and my brother were here, which was growing a bit tiresome. Not them being here. I was happy to help them. But that I never knew when I would have the house to myself again, and I felt selfish even entertaining the idea. But sometimes I did miss my alone time. I made my way into the living room and checked the clock on the wall. It said midnight, which couldn't be true given the sun was out. When I looked out the window, there was a break in the rain and the sun was shining. But that only meant the rain would show up again soon. Kale wasn't there either. I instantly panicked, struggling with the way I was depending on him so much lately. My attachment to him was alarming, and according to the internet, I had an anxious-avoidant attachment style. On the one hand, I was clingy and insecure, not fully trusting but desperate for attachment. And on the other, I was hyper-independent and not willing to fully merge my life with another person's. I grabbed my phone from the couch and called him. His voice was close by when he picked up. His silhouette appeared in front of my screen door, and he walked through.
"You okay?"
He assessed me, a touch of worry lifting his scarred brow. "I didn't know where you were."
"Working on your birthday gift during the break in the rain."
He craned his neck toward the door and porch. Ah, my most favorite and the most thoughtful gift I'd ever received. A deck and a porch swing, built by Kale Martin.
"I didn't want you to think I'd forgotten about it, but between the rain and all the drama, it's taking longer than expected. The rain's supposed to stay at bay for another 3 hours or so if you don't mind, I'm gonna keep working. I can finish the base of the deck at least, since all the wood is cut and measured."
He sounded excited, and I sure as hell couldn't wait to see it finished. On top of that, I had to go into Molly's soon. "I have to work at some point anyway, so you can take all the time you need. My shift is about 5 hours long. I have 2 regulars, 1 new client, and space for a walk-in. If there isn't one, I can leave after 3 treatments.
"Great. I'll get back to work then, and you get yourself ready. There's food in the oven if you have time to take a few bites at least. And coffee in the pot.
But you don't drink coffee," I noted. He smiled, dazzling as ever.
"You do."
I moved to wrap my arms around his waist, and he made a dramatic sound like I was squeezing all the air out of his lungs. "I'll miss you," I told him, leaning on my toes to kiss him. He bent his head down to give me an achingly slow, luxurious, and tempting kiss. I slid my tongue between his parted lips, and he gently gripped my hair behind my neck, tugging. My body prickled with desire.
"If you want to make it on time to work, I wouldn't do that," he warned, pulling away from the kiss.
I blinked, mesmerized by the seductive tone of his threat. I couldn't afford to be late today. Stuart was coming in for her last treatment before her big move to Hawaii with her wife. "Rain check?" I asked,
sucking at the inside corner of his full lips.
Always.
He pulled away, kissing my cheek, my chin, my forehead, then lifted my hand and kissed each finger.
I'll be here when you get back. Now go eat and down some caffeine, baby.
He swatted my ass as I skipped away, high off the adrenaline rush he gave me and from hearing him call me baby. I went into the kitchen and got the food out of the oven. Grabbing a spoon, I dug into the dish. It smelled familiar, but I hadn't had it at Dory's. From the pan it was in, though, I could tell it had come from her. It tasted like the best version of a cinnamon roll mixed with bread pudding, and had big, salty chunks of pecans throughout. It was so, so good. I grabbed a cup of coffee and felt creative when I dunked the bread into the coffee. Oh my God, was it delicious. An eye on the clock told me I had about 3 minutes until I needed to splash water on my face and brush my teeth. My hair was in a braid that was coming loose, but it would make it through my shift. Kale making it possible for me to have my own porch swing made me so energized, so excited for the day. I wished all days started off so well. I brushed my teeth and rinsed my face, putting a thin layer of moisturizer, then sunscreen on, and was done with my routine for the morning and went to my room to put on my work clothes. I opted for a pale purple work set, even though I usually wore black. Saying goodbye to Kale on the porch felt like we were playing house again. He was here more than he wasn't lately, and I kept coming back to the fact that I found myself depending on him more with each thoughtful gesture, each action that made my day a bit better, a bit easier. When I got to work, my mood was much better than the day before. I had a smile on my face and a little pep in my step. I was a bit worried yesterday that I was getting sick or something, but I just needed a break, mentally and physically. And sleep and warm food. You're better today. Molly echoed my thoughts as she pulled one side of the curtain to my workroom open. I nodded, lighting my candles. Since it was fall, I was using both vanilla pumpkin and cozy fireside scents. The sweetness of the one and the earthiness of the other blended together perfectly.
Good, I don't want to worry about you. You're the stable one here.
She smiled at me while running her index finger over my counter to make sure it was clean. Of course it was. I laughed, knowing that there weren't any clients there yet.
I'm the stable one?
We're all screwed then.
We're all screwed anyway. Taxes are up, wages are down, the economy is shit. People can barely feed a family of four anymore.
She used my small mirror on the counter to mess with her eyelashes.
Enough small talk. Are you two going to keep calling out of work? My husband is taking me on a cruise in 2 weeks, and I need someone to stand in as the manager while I'm gone.
Ah, so the vacation fever has set in. That was why she was more dressed up and cheery than usual. A vacation. I couldn't wait for the day when I could take a vacation that I paid for myself. Maybe Mexico or Barcelona? That day was a long way away, but a girl could dream. Are you asking me? I brought myself out of the daydream of a beach chair, a book, and no responsibilities for a solid week.
Yes. And if you don't burn down or remodel the place while I'm gone, maybe you can take over some of my workload, as a manager.
I couldn't hide my surprise.
Really?
I nearly shrieked. I went to hug her, but she backed away, swatting at me in true Molly fashion.
Don't get too excited. Nothing is happening until I see what you do while I'm gone. But I can't work forever.
I poked a finger toward her cheek, but knew better than to touch it. And you trust me, I teased her in a sing-song voice. She shook her head.
I knew I shouldn't have said anything.
She wagged her hand in annoyance as she left my workroom. I was smiling ear to ear. A manager. That would mean more hours, a raise, even if it wasn't much, and more control over the spa and the chance to make it better and busier than it was now. I didn't want to get ahead of myself, but who was I kidding? Of course, I grabbed my phone and texted Kale, telling him that I might be getting a promotion.
My heart was beating fast as I moved around my room, waiting for my client to come. Stuart was right on time, and she hugged me as soon as she saw me. "I can't believe this is my last time seeing you," I told her as we pulled away from the embrace.
"I'm gonna miss you in our chats here. You know more about me than my therapist does."
She smiled, her unique green eyes shining with kindness. I led her back to my space and gave her time to get situated on the table. I thought back to the first time I ever had her as a client and how we'd immediately clicked, even though I'd been having the worst day ever. I had just started working here and I'd been late. My brother had gotten in trouble at our uncle's and my dad wouldn't stop calling me to complain. I'd been worried sick for Austin and of course he hadn't answered my calls. Stuart had been so empathetic. She could immediately tell that I was off, but that I wouldn't want to say so or let it affect my job. So I'd held my own problems in, suffering in silence as usual. She'd confided in me about her life, not all at once, but in a slow and intimate conversation that had distracted me from my crappy day. She'd been so generous emotionally, and we'd had a great session. Stuart had booked her next appointment on the spot, given me a huge tip, and made me feel so much less anxiety over whether I would make a good therapist or not. Over the last year, we'd bonded, and though I'd kept it as professional as I could, I considered her to be someone I truly cared about. I was so happy for her and her wife and their new life in Hawaii, but I would miss her. After her treatment, she gave me another hug and another too high tip, but refused to take it back when I refused it. I wished her well, and off she went. The provisional lifespan of military friendships and relationships was not something I would ever get used to. I never planned on entangling myself with the enlisted or their families, but plans are just that, and I'd clearly failed. I could not be more entangled than I was. My shift continued to go well, and by the time I finally looked at the clock, it was time for me to go. I tidied up my space and put a load of towels in the washer to make Elodie's shift a bit easier for her. I wrote a little note for her and left it on her cabinet with a small candle from my room that she had complimented a few days ago. She walked in the back door as I was leaving, but she either didn't see me or was ignoring me. Since she had no reason to ignore me, I brushed it off and went on my way, eager to get home, hoping Cale was there waiting for me. He was still outside working on the deck. A tremendous amount of work had been done in a short time. I looked for Austin, assuming he had been helping, but only Cale was there, on his knees, hammering one piece of wood to another to cover my concrete steps. "Did you see Elodie?" I asked as I approached him. He turned to me, wiping his brow with the bottom of his t-shirt. It wasn't remotely hot outside to me, but I hadn't been working on a deck for hours.
"Yeah, but she's upset with me, so she didn't talk to me."
"Why would Elodie be upset with you?" I asked. Elodie had a soft spot for Cale, taking his side even over mine sometimes. Cale looked away from me and stood.
"Are you sure you want to know?"
"Do you know me?" I asked, wondering what on earth they could be fighting about.
"I gave your brother a hard time over something and was wrong about it."
"Don't be cryptic. What did you give him a hard time over?" Cale sighed and sat down at the beginning of my sidewalk. The grass was still wet from the on and off rain, but the sun had dried the concrete.
"I heard him talking on the phone with someone about money, and I accused him of using."
My scalp prickled. "Why did you assume he's using just because he was talking about money?" I knew why, and couldn't say I wouldn't think the same, but Cale had always been so hard on my brother and quick to accuse him of being on drugs. Whether he was right sometimes or not, it pissed me off. My dad once told me that if my brother murdered someone, I would make the best defense for him, even if I caught him with the gun in his hand. I like to think he was wrong, but I couldn't be sure.
"Because of his history, I guess. I feel like shit over it, and I'm going to apologize. I haven't seen him, though."
"Where is he?" It's not like he has many places to go these days, I said, pulling my phone out to text Austin.
Not sure. Maybe he's at mine.
As he finished the sentence, his eyes went wide and his nostrils flared. He reached for his phone as it vibrated in his pocket. Gloria's name and photo popped up on the screen. He answered instantaneously. Less than 30 seconds later, we were in his truck, driving way over the speed limit to get to Kale's place. I kept asking Kale what was going on, but he was dead silent, intent on getting there as fast as possible. I was panicking. Was my brother really on drugs? Did he overdose with Mendoza there? Was Mendoza drunk and out of control, and had Austin called Gloria? None of the scenarios made much sense, and each one made me more nauseated than the last.
I know you won't, but I really wish you would stay in the truck,
Kale told me as we pulled up, his voice tight. Like always, I climbed out of the truck and noted Mendoza's van parked on the street. Was Gloria here? I was about to text her when I heard shouting coming from inside. Kale moved faster than my eyes or feet could follow. When I got to the front door, it was locked, that bastard. My brother's voice mixed with another man's, which I didn't recognize. I made my way to the back of the duplex, hoping to God that the back door was unlocked. It wasn't. I began to feel helpless, which sent me into rage. I hated feeling helpless more than any other emotion. Kale was doing what he thought was right, but so was I. I pounded on the door as the not familiar voice clicked in my brain. Phillips. A line of ice water trickled through my veins. I pounded harder. Let me in, I screamed. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I knew that me being there wasn't going to help a single bit. That it would distract Kale and my brother from whatever the hell was happening inside the house. But I couldn't help it. I was that idiot in films who never listened and kept adding fuel to the fire. Before I could change my mind and go back to Kale's truck and hope for the best, the door flew open and Phillips met me eye to eye. He looked like a madman, his front teeth covered in blood. I looked past him to see my brother, panting and holding his waist. Mendoza was propping him up, and Kale was standing in the middle of the room, with his hands spread out like wings, keeping distance between them.
Oh, look who joined us. Now the party can really begin, Phillips said,
bloody smile gazing down at me. A sharp pain ran through my body, and I yelped, not realizing that he had grabbed a fistful of my hair and was yanking me farther into the room. Kale's expression turned murderous, and he flew toward Phillips. I was tossed to the ground and staggered backward on my hands to get out of the eye of the storm. Karina, leave, my brother spat. I could barely register what I was seeing. A piece of blue plastic was dangling from his side, and his t-shirt was lifted and covered in blood. A screwdriver. There was a screwdriver hanging out of his side. I could taste bile in my throat as I tried to move closer to him without Kale stopping me or Philip noticing.
What the fuck happened? You said you were going to stop this!
Kale shouted, grabbing Phillips by the shirt and lifting his body like he was a rag doll.
You should have kept him away from me. I was gonna leave today to go to my parents, but he fucking came here to taunt me. I didn't come to taunt you, I didn't know you were fucking here, my brother coughed out.
As I pulled my phone out to call the MPs, Mendoza noticed and silently shook his head at me. So I put my phone away. I crawled closer to where my brother was and stood up,